Welcome back to the Wise Divine Woman podcast, where I help you go from fed up to faith fueled, helping you to become the person that you're meant to be, like who you're created to be through this haze of menopause. Welcome to the show, Christine McCarroll. And I'm so excited to speak to her today. We are going to dive into the topic of ADHD. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. What brought you to this? I know that you're a coach, a life coach, health coach. And so why this topic? Why are you moving, like diving deep about it?
So I got into the world of functional nutrition, which is kind of how I started a little over 10 years ago. And it had started because my younger daughter, and actually at this point, it's been like 12 years since that happened. My younger daughter was diagnosed with a neurological speech condition. And I won't tell that whole story, but I will say what happened out of that is that she had been losing her words, and she had a potential, from what we were told from professionals, what we were reading from other parents on message boards, of essentially losing all her words and not being able to speak, or, you know, maybe having a vocabulary of under 20 words. And what was heartbreaking most about that to me was that there were no cognitive deficiencies that went along with that. Mm-hmm. It was literally something where her brain wouldn't be able to get the words out. So she would have thoughts, she would understand what people were saying to her, and then not be able to say anything in return, which sounded horrible to me. So I went into mama bear mode and just went really deep on research. I was in an entirely different field. I was working in corporate America. And so I had my full-time job, and I was, you know, kind of burning the candle at both ends and looking for the research on how I could help my daughter beyond the traditional speech therapy, which we did start, you know, traditional speech therapy with her, but I was like, there has to be something else. So got, you know, 5-6 months down the line and had found some really fantastic information on nutritional strategies to help. Lots and lots and lots of closed doors. That's the whole long part of that story. But really no one wanted to help. You know, conventional medicine didn't really have any answers, and they didn't understand what I wanted to do with some of these nutritional interventions. And they just basically said no. And I said, I wasn't asking for permission. I was asking for help. So finally was able to find someone, got her started on some nutritional strategies, and she started talking within a few weeks. And so it was just this miraculous turnaround. So I started all of this looking at how does the relationship of what we put into our bodies feed our health of every organ, including the brain, right? So when we are giving our brains what they need, then how can they work better? So that was my entry point. But then I just ended up working with women and women's health for nearly a decade after going back to school and, you know, learning officially about nutritional therapy and going into that as a profession. I just worked with women's health. And so that was fantastic. And then a couple of years ago, she started to struggle again. And then I was also starting to struggle. And it was different, right? She had really fully recovered. We had her in, you know, regular classes. She was doing great in school. But she started to struggle. I started to struggle. And I actually went through some genetic assessment because I was starting to investigate that for my nutritional practice, and saw all the genetic predisposition for me having ADHD. And at the same time, we've been having conversations with her school. And I think they can't say those words because it's diagnostic at the school. So her counselor was like, sounds like she has executive function challenges. And I didn't know that was like code for ADHD, right? So when I saw kind of like my genetic piece and it became so clear to me, and then I actually understood what that executive function was for her. And because I had all of this background in health and functional health and having, you know, helped her recover brain function a decade before, I was like, well, clearly this is actually going in, and I need to help, understanding this phenomenon, because it is so, so very different for women, and we experience it differently. Our brains work differently anyway. And then you add in things like hormone changes around perimenopause, which is what I was experiencing, and adolescence, which is what she was experiencing. And now we have this whole can of worms that really people aren't adequately addressing.
Right, right, exactly. So it is something that we are sort of coming up to see. And I mentioned before we started recording that I was skeptical, not skeptical in the sense of that it is debilitating. It's hard to understand. It's hard for women to break through this brain fog aspect of things and the functionality of life perimenopausal. And even postmenopausal, it becomes may become worse for some women. So how are you helping women kind of wade their way through the muck of it?
Yeah, so I think a lot of the foundational work is similar to what I was already doing because mm-hmm. there is such an intersection with hormonal balance and mm-hmm. ADHD symptoms. And there are things that just have to be working for any system in your body to work. You have to have balanced blood sugar. You have to have sufficient nutrients. You have to be getting enough sleep. You have to be moving your body. You have to get some sunshine, like some foundational stuff that just sadly, I think, is deficient in our modern society, right? Like we're sitting at computers. We are not going outside. We are not sleeping very well. We're eating a lot of really processed foods, all the things that would make us not feel good anyway. Right. And when we add on some of these genetic predispositions, it just makes it that much harder. So I'm looking at starting from a point of, we always have to do, I just say clearing the muddy waters. We have to clear the muddy waters first, right? You have to start eating in a way that is going to fuel your brain. We have to get sufficient protein and fats to fuel your brain. We have to reduce the sugar ups and downs. We have to get you sleeping. That's like foundational. The next level is looking at things that might be impacting brain health that most people aren't looking at. Like, what's your omega-3 to omega-6 ratio? Are you deficient in specific nutrients that we know are important for brain health? Are there thyroid imbalances, which is huge for women at any age, but absolutely has a big role to play in brain issues. And a lot of women experience brain fog only because of their thyroid issues, for example, right? Are there hormone imbalances that are creating more stress on the brain? So, you know, I will go a level deeper after we clear the foundations and say, well, what else can be in here that's creating a problem? And then there are what I call bridge supports, which is just things that I think help our brains feel better. So like specific botanicals, specific amino acids, like things that can kind of help our ADHD brains be online a little better and function a little bit more clearly.
Mm-hmm. So true. I did a big nosedive into iodine last night and just understanding it from a breast health perspective. And that was a 4-hour read. So that was amazing. And I love that you brought that up because it is vitally important. And a lot of people don't understand even the estrogen brain connection as well, and how vitally important estrogen is to brain function. It's a whole maze of information and understanding to make the body optimal. And I love that you went back to, you have to have a foundation. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. There are clear things you have to have established in your lifestyle, in your nutrition, in your movement, and even supplementation, just foundation before you can really make changes moving forward. The interesting point, and I love that you test those things. And I'm sure there's women that you just know, let's look at their genetics, right? Let's take a backwards look at your health. And I love that you did that for yourself. I've done it for myself as well. Not that it changes things. It just allows you to dig a little deeper sideways and come in the back door to overcoming some health challenges and maybe designing nutrition to be better that way. And I love that. I think it's an important piece of information. It's not that it doesn't give you the be all and end all to things, but at least it allows you to go down that path a little further when you're understanding health and why things aren't changing. Do you find that women who are perimenopause or postmenopausal with these deficiencies, do you find that some of them are not wanting to change their foundation and are just looking for the diagnosis so that they can have the drugs without changing anything?
I'm sure there's a lot of women that's their path, right? You know, to me, a diagnosis is useful. First of all, I don't diagnose. So
no, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Have to come with a diagnosis anyway, even if they have suspicions, we'll just kind of like look at underlying factors. Right.
Right.
But you know, to me, a diagnosis is helpful really in any context, so certainly in ADHD, but really in any context, because it gives us the starting point to know where to look, right? So I can now go into the literature and do things like search on, you know, ADHD and thyroid. I can search on ADHD and specific nutrients. And so that gives me the place to look, right? So it's Amazing. The starting point of saying like, and actually tons of research has been done on things like nutritional compounds and things like that. And specifically with these health conditions. And, you know, I've had other things like in my family, other health conditions, other family members have experienced where as a broad paintbrush strategy wasn't helpful, even things that we would say are foundational health kind of items in their particular case because of their particular diagnosis based on what's in the literature. So I think a diagnosis is helpful from that lens of like, okay, this is my starting point. Because I work in holistic functional wellness, the people who want the medication aren't the ones who are coming to me, right? They're getting the diagnosis
their
and going
doctor.
To their doctor and they're not going to come to me. And that's totally fine. Or someone, another pathway is someone has been to the doctor, they have been on medication and it didn't work for them for whatever reason. And so with ADHD in particular, up to 30% of people can't take medication. And so if they find themselves in that bucket and they're saying, maybe even I wanted to, and it just didn't work for me in my body, but I still want to feel better. Like what else is out there? And I don't think there's enough conversation about brain health as that pathway, right? So even things like, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy or other coaching strategies, which are phenomenal, they're not addressing the underlying health of that organ that's like creating everything, right? So I think it's just an under-recognized avenue when we're talking about like, how do you make your brain feel better? We're like, okay, we actually have to look at the physical structure of this organ and what can be modified to help that physical thing physically feel better.
Right. What are like three points that in their diet people can change to help brain function?
So one thing is sufficient protein. And I say that for like just about everyone and certainly every woman. And most, I think I have maybe seen, you know, in 10 years of practice, like two women who came to me already eating enough protein. And one of them was in the last 6 months because she was on a carnivore diet because she put herself on it for other reasons, right? I didn't give her that structure. So most people are under eating protein. And when we're thinking about neurotransmitters, so dopamine is the primary neurotransmitter that we're looking at being perturbed in ADHD. So there's variations in production, there's variations in clearance. So we tend to have lower dopamine in our brains with ADHD. But even if we were talking about serotonin, like a lot of people have heard of SSRIs, which is a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. We're looking at a neurotransmitter, right? So when we're looking at the chemistry, those neurotransmitters are directly produced from amino acids, which is what we get from eating protein, right? So if we are low in that pool, if we have a low amino acid pool because we have low protein, we aren't going to have sufficient raw materials. And you know, my analogy is you're trying to build a brick house out of toilet paper. So you could have truckloads, you could have barges full of toilet paper, but it's still never going to be bricks, right? And so if you want to build a brick house, you have to use bricks. So protein is absolutely number one. We're also getting a lot of really poor quality fats and a lot of kind of the, you know, your brain structure is primarily fat. Fat is one of the, you know, the main structural points of our brains. So for having poor quality fats, or insufficient omega-3s versus omega-6, which a lot of people have heard of omega-3s is in things like certain kinds of fish. That is true. Most of us have a lot of processed seed oils and fats, which is omega-6. And so when that ratio is off, things tend to not work as well in our bodies. And then moderating sugar. And, you know, something that a lot of people don't know is your brain actually can get insulin resistant. So our tissues can become insulin resistant, but so can our brains. And women over 40, 45 tend to start becoming more insulin resistant anyway. Unfortunately, that is just, that's our biology.
It is.
And so if we're heading in that way anyway, and then we are creating insulin resistance in our bodies, and then our brains are becoming insulin resistant, same thing, we're not getting the fuel that we need to be like able to think clearly and function well.
It's so true, right? We see this, like in thermography, I see this. So I always, that's a great discussion about talking about sugars and insulin resistance and all those types of things. And again, it's just this gentle reminder of, we already know that type 3 diabetes is, you know, this brain function. Mm-hmm. And I think, well, even when you're talking menopause with women or this perimenopause, the brain fog seems to be, well, at least for me, a little debilitating, because it's this fear of like, am I losing my mind? And for me and many women, again, the losing of the mind, I think sometimes outweighs a lot of other fears. Never mind mm-hmm. osteoporosis or never mind those things, but it's this, I can't lose my brain. And so understanding the fats, understanding protein, I don't think anyone, I mean, there are, but what it's always surprising when you talk to women about protein, how much protein is actually required. It's unbelievable to them, honestly, because it's like, I don't think I even eat that much food.
Yeah.
You know, and it is hard. And it is trying to even get them away from the protein powders. You need the natural food, natural digestive enzyme processed, get everything, all the nuggets, all the amino acids, all the goodness out of the real food. And then using protein powder for your last ditch effort at the end of the day type of idea. But I wish that we would all really, and I know many of us are, and we're really focusing to that. And it's not really labeling, trying to get away from these diet fad labels, because we as women tend to have this emotional eating connection always, rather than it just being, this is your foundation period. You need to do ABC. Men understand that much better than women, but we seem to throw in all these emotions, connections when it comes to eating or health. So,
well, and that is true for I think all women, and having worked with women for a decade, I can 100% say that that's true. And there is a much greater percentage of binge eating with women with ADHD, because of that can be a stimulation for, again, additional dopamine input. And when people are tending to binge eat, they're not really going to be binge eating like ground turkey. They're going to be binge eating, you know, cookies and ice cream and cake, like that quick sugar hit, right? And so then we're worsening the problem. It feels better in the moment, which is why we do it. But then long term, it's creating more problems. But it is actually a more substantial problem for women with ADHD, because of that dopamine connection.
So do you think it's sort of a problem that we didn't recognize as youths, as teenagers, that we're recognizing it now, since, you know, the sort of comparison is in perimenopause to menopause is coming back to pubescence, right? Becoming to preteen hormone levels. Do you think it's sort of full circle? We didn't recognize it as teens because it just wasn't part of the structure of health then, or mental health then?
Yeah. So I think there are multiple reasons why more women in midlife. And if you look at, like, I was on a recent call, thousands of women had responded to a survey with, one of the like big magazines that helps people with ADHD, and the huge bell curve was the diagnosis was midlife. And I think there's a few reasons. I think number one, it actually literally was not recognized as a potential diagnosis for females at all, period, prior to about 20 years ago. It was considered to be a little boy's issue. And they thought you outgrew it. They didn't realize that there were underlying literal physical differences in brain structure and brain chemistry and genetics around how we process neurotransmitters. So they just thought it went away, but really just little boys, like maybe they went and, you know, got on the football team or something, or they learned how to sit still in their chair a little bit better. But it, you know, it was very much of, we were seeing it as hyperactivity exclusively. And if we look at diagnostic criteria, that has changed a lot over the years as well. Mm-hmm. And so it used to really be just the hyperactive. And so now we're looking at the inattentive type, which is how a majority of women present. And so it can, you know, people can have different kinds, but there's hyperactive, which is like physically really kind of hyperkinetic. There's inattentive, which is more of the dreamy kind of like you're kinetic in your mind, but you look fine on the outside. So a lot more women present that way. So no one was noticing it. And then there's a combined type where you kind of have both. So it wasn't even available as a diagnosis. I'm about to be 46. When I was a kid, it was not, didn't exist. It was a little boy mm-hmm. thing. You got through it. I think the, again, like those hormonal changes around midlife are exacerbating symptoms that might've already been there, because there is a strong relationship between estrogen and dopamine. So as we're getting those estrogenic shifts, we're getting even worse around the dopamine that we were already feeling. And I think now also we are at an age where we might be having children, which is kind of how my path was, children who are getting a diagnosis. And then all of a sudden we're going, oh, wait, hold on. Like, all of these symptoms that I just did in this questionnaire are true for me too, and have been true since I was a kid, and I just never knew. And so I think that seeing our children get diagnosed is creating awareness as well. So I think those kind of those three factors are what has created a higher rate of diagnosis for women in midlife.
So what are three different points to recognize? I know we've listed a few things. You've talked about, you know, that the checklist in the magazine. Outside of the normal menopausal shifts and symptoms, signs and symptoms of menopause, which are often associated or paralleled with ADHD, what are three key things that can help women go, maybe I should investigate this further?
Yeah, so I actually want to hit on that great point you just brought up, which is not to confuse the things that are happening with changes in the brain function at midlife with ADHD, not that it can't kind of induce similar symptoms, but if it just came on out of the blue, it's more than likely not something that is an underlying factor, right? And so I would say for women who are thinking back like I did and kind of went back and being like, yes, from my earliest memory, this is my experience.
How you were.
That's different from, and you know, because my analogy is like, oh, I was at a simmer all this time, and then I like came to a full boil around perimenopause, but there was simmering for a long time, right? And I was pretty good at covering that up. So the executive function pieces are things like they are more related to short-term than long-term memory. So like remembering where you put your keys, which again, like, yes, that can totally be a thing that's happening in perimenopause and menopause, but like longstanding. So keeping track of like, you know, your kids' sporting event, birthday, and sending out the birthday card, and you know, when you went to the grocery store, remembering what you were supposed to get. It's a lot of the short-term memory type of pieces. Problems with time and time management. It's really interesting, all of the underlying factors that relate to dopamine and time perception, which actually has to do with things like even like blinking rate. It's really fascinating. But you know, maybe you're just always late and you're like, I really am trying to be on time. I was 2 minutes late to this conversation today, right? But like the just consistently, or thinking that you're going to finish something in an hour when really it's a 4-hour project. So just really miscalculating and misunderstanding and misinterpreting time. And then generally organization, which is a big shame point for a lot of women, because kind of that ideal woman is all the things I just said. She's on time. She's organized and remembers her children's things. And she is like organized in her like home environment, right? One of the other things is visual perception. So like you have to see something to remember it. So, you know, a constant battle in my house is I leave my supplements on the counter and my husband puts them away. And I'm like, no, if you put them away, I won't remember to take them. I want to see them, right? And so like, you know, my organization is like, I have things in piles or I have them out where I can see them. And, you know, things that are like a traditional, like filing system, like that is not how my brain works. Right. So, those are some challenges that a lot of women have, around like that are kind of underlying factors and somewhat driven by, or largely driven by, biochemistry and brain function.
I think that's amazing. And that's such a good point to differentiate between the two, because there's a lot of things that parallel. And if you're like me, for sure, a lot of things you're like, or my husband, oh yeah, these things can be the key, right? And because of the hormonal changes, things and exhaustion, right? Sleep patterns,
sure. Yeah.
just make things explode or symptomology explode or really come to the surface rather than trying to hide them all the time. In your practice, you're still helping men and women with the focus of ADHD now. As you said in your shift, you are shifting your podcast to be more ADHD focused. Mm-hmm. Are you also doing that in your practice as well?
Yeah. So, You know, I think that a lot of women are, again, kind of coming to this new awareness and looking for alternatives. So I am really driving my practice in that direction. And also, you know, I have spent one of the benefits, I will say, of ADHD is the ability to hyper-focus, right? So there is the trouble focusing on maybe things that other people want you to focus on. But if you latch onto something, and I've actually, there's another thing I've said since, like, you know, forever, I'm like a pit bull, right? You give me a thing, and I'm gonna hang on to it until I have wrung everything possible out of it. So as soon as I started understanding ADHD, like, one of the first things I did is I went and got an additional certification. So I went through, you know, Dr. Daniel Amen, who's one of the foremost experts yes. on brain health. He has a certification program, certified brain health professional. I just went like full into that, deep dive into that that world. Right, finished that certification, and then have continued my own personal education since then. And so now I've done way more research on this than I think almost any other kind of practitioner has done. So I am absolutely wanting to share this with women who want this kind of information, right? So so I am moving my practice in that direction. I have my male clients. I've always, you know, advertised and put out that I work with women. But what happens, you know, and I'm sure you know this too, you work with women, they're like, oh, but my husband, my brother, my son, what, like. So I have the guys, but I've done a lot of research and work and understanding for myself, for my daughter, for my clients, mm-hmm. the female perspective. And so, yeah, that's where I'm putting a majority of my work these days.
I love it. I love it. I love that you are focusing from a functional point of view, making sure that the food, the foundation, movement and stress management and digestion, all these things that are so key regardless, but how much it benefits the brain health. And Dr. Amen is an incredible speaker and teacher as well. I refer to him often, especially when it comes to young children. You know, go at least get started down that path of understanding, because he speaks of it often. Mm-hmm. And so many moms are out there trying to help their own kids. And it's always that sort of helping themselves in return, right? Mm-hmm. I often have the same analogy with people with their animals. Well, whatever you're giving your dog, probably needs yourself.
Yeah. I've absolutely had people who were like feeding their dogs better than they were eating. Like, they're like, oh, I have to do like this whole food, you know, like making the thing in the crock pot. And like, I'm like, wow, could you also do that? Like, just that, actually, that food you just made is fantastic for you too. Just make an extra portion.
Oh. It's so funny. It's honestly so funny. So where can people find you, Christine? I know we could talk for hours, but I love it. Yeah. I want them to find you. And when are you launching the new launch of your podcast?
Yeah. So the new podcast will be out in April. So I don't have an exact date yet, but in April. I also have a private podcast as well, which is just like a 4-episode quickie little secret podcast that you have to opt into, that really goes deep into these things we were talking about. Why is it different for women? What are some functional labs that you would want to be considering when you're looking at your own body's, you know, health? You know, how can you kind of start this process on your own? So that's on my website. So just christinemccarroll.com/privatepod is that private podcast until I relaunch. And then I'm on Instagram. So just my name, christine.mccarroll. It's MAC, which a lot of people get the, just go to MC, but, awesome. Yeah, so those are easy ways to find me.
I love it. I think it's so important. I think that if you are a woman who is sort of questioning, mental health, questioning the functionality of their brain in this cycle of their life or in this transition, and you have resonated with this information that we've talked about today, please reach out to Christine. Wonderful website. Again, Christine McCarroll, MAC.com. And she's got a beautiful website with all of her services and her podcast as well. Thank you so much, Christine. What is a word of wisdom that you would like to share? Something that's deep in your heart that you share often.
You mean like just a one word or just like
a phrase.
Ah, a phrase. Well, my favorite one since I've been like in college was the mind is like a parachute. It only works when open. So having an open mind, being willing to consider perspectives outside of maybe what you've learned so far, curiosity will take you a long way.
Beautiful. I love it. Thank you for sharing your time and your heart and your passion today, Christine. Thank you for joining me on the Wise Divine Woman podcast, where we're helping you go from fed up to faith-fueled, helping you to become all that you're meant to be. Thank you.